everyone. Welcome back to Stutter Talk. You're here with the Stutter Talk B team. And I am Roisin, one of the regular co-hosts. And I'm joined here by my friends Karen Herring. Hey, Karen.
Hey, Roisin.
And Joel Cordy.
Hey, Joel. Hi, friends.
And today we are discussing a listener's email. It's an interesting one, so I'm going to share it quickly. And Paul from Ireland says, I had an interview last week in which I locked up and talking became difficult. I didn't get the job, I think. I think I've been trying to chase the fluency god, and this put too much pressure on me. And he asks, what role did voluntary stuttering play in your recovery? Joe Sheehan once said that a stutter will remain one as long as he pretends not to be one. I have always shied away from this exercise. Your words of wisdom would be appreciated. Paul, from Paul.
Cool. I'm thinking we should define this concept of chasing the fluency god before we dive into the question. Okay. So how about I'll give it a try, and you guys, if I miss anything or if I'm wrong, you can correct me or add stuff. That sound good?
Sounds good.
Okay. So the way that I sort of interpret this concept of, quote, chasing the fluency god, unquote, it's that when a person who stutters really, really, really values fluency to the point where it can actually be like a negative and counterproductive thing. Some sort of examples of that could be like avoiding words or sort of like changing around your phrasing. Or even the most extreme would be not talking at all. And I guess it's just valuing fluency to the point where it's negative in a way, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think that sounds good as a dead definition.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I feel like when I'm in places or times in my life where I'm chasing the fluency god, I don't know if I necessarily see it as a negative thing, though.
Yeah, explain.
I don't know. Like in my head at the time, it's like that's the most important thing. I don't think I really think about the negative sides.
I think it depends for me. I think there's times where I've been oblivious to it possibly being negative, and then now if I'm chasing the fluency god, which still happens on occasion, mm-hmm. I know it. I'm like, dude, you need to be okay with stuttering, essentially, and then that's helpful.
Yeah. I think it's for... I think it's to agree with Joel. I'm usually aware of when it's happening, and it's always situational for me. There are some situations where stuttering can be hard and challenging, but I'm not trying not to stutter. And there are some situations, like Paul's situation, like a job interview, where there's so much pressure on you to conform, to be the perfect candidate for the job. And usually the quote unquote perfect candidate, there are no like hiccups in his his or her presentation. Like you want it to be, you want to appear perfect. When I'm chasing the fluency god, it's a form of self-loathing. Like it becomes like a very personal attack on myself, and I tell myself I failed because I'm always going to fail because I'm not fluent. Yeah.
I can relate to that in a horrible way.
Yeah. It's a horrible feeling.
Go ahead.
Do you guys think that we're almost like to train to chase the fluency god? Like I feel like growing up, it wasn't even a choice. It was just sort of like assumed that like that's what I'm going to chase.
Yeah, and then it was at least for me, it was explicit that was the goal. It wasn't like, you know, like a suggestion or like, you know, I just wanted to be normal. It was like, you should try to be fluent.
I'm sure I've mentioned this on the show, but maybe I haven't. But I'll never forget a time when I spoke with my Uncle Jack on the phone. And I can't remember how old I was, but I didn't stutter at all. And I was using tricks like crazy, you know, switching words, doing all sorts of stuff, doing whatever I could, you know, not to stutter. And afterwards, my Uncle Jack told my mom, you know, that basically he was really, I don't know, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but it was impressive to him. You know, he's like, wow, like I didn't hear Joel stutter at all on the phone. And then, of course, my mom, trying to be helpful, relayed that feedback back to me, like, wow, you know, like overwhelmingly positive. Or it made me think, so it's like, okay, you did all these really weird things to pass as fluent, and people like that. So, especially your family, who you really care about.
No, yeah. I hear you.
So then it's like, well, yeah, but I mean, you know, my mom didn't know that I was doing all this weird stuff to try to pass as fluent, you know. And right. Yeah, I wanted to be fluent more than they wanted me to be fluent, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I didn't care how it happened.
Yeah.
Well, I sort of did, because you always know that you're doing tricks, you know. You know that it's not real, and you're kind of like, struggling. You're not sure how long it's going to last, and you're worried about the time when it doesn't work, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's the quote that Paul mentioned from Joe Sheehan is interesting. He said that once, no, wait. He said that a stutterer will remain one as long as he pretends not to be one. I'm not sure that I like part of that. There's something in that quote that to me makes it seem like being a stutterer is like a punishment or something. But I think that there's probably truth in there. What do you guys think?
I didn't get the punishment vibe.
I get the vibe that it's like, there's a message under it that once you accept yourself and like you and you mature to a certain point, then you can free yourself from being a stutterer. And just that idea to me is a kind of like dangerous one.
Yeah. I feel like I agree with like part of the quote.
Yeah.
Like I think that it is true to do much with your speech or to change anything or, I think being free in a sense of like the fear and the anxiety or the feeling of trying to hide. But I don't necessarily think, like, I think once you do accept it, I think that you still are a stutterer. I just don't, I think it comes with less of that emotional baggage of just like trying to be something you're not and feeling like you failed.
Yeah, to make the quote true for me, because it's not really true for me, it would have to, I mean, and I love Joseph Sheehan, but it would have to be, you know, as long as you, well, now I can't remember exactly what the quote was, but as long as you pretend to stutter, you will be unhappy and a bad communicator.
Wait, no, that didn't mean.
That was the best thing I've ever heard you say, because you just said that as long as you voluntarily stutter.
I said voluntarily.
Yeah, as long as you.
I don't know. Oh, what's
as
wrong
long as
with
you pretend,
me?
As long as you pretend to stutter, you will be a bad
God. Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay. Oh, my gosh. Do you guys know what I was. Okay. What did I mean? I said, as long as you pretend not to stutter, would that fix
yes.
it?
Yes.
Okay. As long as
that made
you
me so
pretend
happy for a second.
Not to stutter, you will be unhappy. And a bad communicator. That's my truth for me personally.
Right.
Thank you for fixing that for me.
I just, like, I'm trying to think back to the time where I was chasing the fluency god so hard.
Just hard.
Just hard.
Just a hard
but
chase.
I don't remember feeling unhappy in a sense. I remember speech therapist telling me that like this won't work and this isn't like a great solution. And I remember thinking like no, like this is fine. Like I can get by and say enough of what I want to say and not let anyone know the had I stutter.
But how old were you?
I don't know, up until like high school.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
Well, yeah, like I kind of feel like you can have that illusion until you have to really be independent in the world, and then like that just all crashes down.
I guess one of my things is like, is there, if someone is in the place where they're still chasing the fluency god and it doesn't seem all that bad, like, is there, I don't know, like, do they need to not chase it, or is there a way to sort of help them see that it might not be the most helpful thing, or is it sort of just like they have to ride it out?
Well, I think, to answer your question, I think there's lots and lots of peoples that live their entire life like that. And, you know, I don't know what defines a happy and successful life. I'm sure they experience lots of positive things. But I would say on average, this is just total BS I'm spewing. It's just like my opinion. On average, if you manage your stuttering by, you know, trying to pass as fluent, or, you know, well, I guess it's kind of two different things, but that can lead to, you know, not being as good of a communicator as you could, and probably not really enjoying a lot of your communication, because you're just so worried about being fluent, I would think.
Yeah.
I wonder if it has something to do with how closely a person identifies with stuttering.
Yeah.
Because if you feel like it's a huge like it's a part of the way you were born, and you could never shake it, and you could never, it was always with you, and you could always feel it, and it was like kind of like always there and a big part of you, then to like try and hide that will hurt you. But if you have just felt, you've never just never really like got, the message never got to you that like it's really important and, you know, it's very strange and why are you talking like that? If you never like got that message somehow, I could see that just trying to shake it wouldn't be as damaging.
Yeah. You know, we should probably answer this guy's main question.
True.
So, Karen, or Roisin.
I don't even remember what the main question was.
It was
what, so I have the email
role,
in front of me.
What role, I believe, unless I'll mess this one up too. What role did voluntary stuttering play in your recovery?
Yeah.
I don't feel I'm recovered. Well, okay. Wait, what am I talking about here? What's he asking? What does recovery mean?
Yeah. Like, this is actually a pretty like chock full email.
Yeah,
of things.
There's a lot of meat.
Yeah.
I will say, I don't know, in my, I don't, I guess I kind of feel weird saying recovery, but in my improvement as a stuttering manager, I think that it probably, I would say next to meeting people who stutter and, you know, maybe after that it's doing a lot of desensitization work, which is tied into voluntary stuttering. I think it's kind of, it's played an enormous role. And it's always something that I go back to, because every time I'm afraid to stutter, it's always there. It's like an old friend, you know? And anytime you feel that fear coming up, you can just stutter.
Yeah,
I think that it was really huge for me too, in the sense that it was the first time that I could decide sort of when I was going to stutter and how it was going to sound. So like gaining some of that control back, but also being able to like play around and almost have fun with the idea of stuttering, not have it be this awful, scary thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the desensitization piece is huge. And I think that voluntary stuttering was definitely a big part of that for me, to be able to go into a situation where I would usually not want to stutter and sort of decide like, I'm gonna fake stutter when I ask for this and sort of like feel out what the response is or how it goes or how I feel when it's done or how long can I hold on to one and see that the world won't end. Mm-hmm. Sort of showed me that maybe the fluency God wasn't as great as I thought it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, to be honest, it hasn't played a very big role, for me. And when I say recovery, the only way that I can sort of think about it now is like being afraid of the future for a long time, changing into not being afraid of the future because of stuttering. Mm. And voluntary stuttering could play a role in it if I actually did it, but I rarely do. And I think for me, I mean the same thing that you guys are saying, that meeting people who stutter and becoming involved with people who's not romantically, but I did that too. But meeting people who's a stutter and becoming involved in the stuttering community, and desensitization, which I think came as a result of being involved in the stuttering community, has been the two biggest things for me. So telling people that I stutter, openly stuttering, you know, putting myself in challenging situations in spite of stuttering, has been like the pivotal thing. But voluntary stuttering for me, it's something, it's an idea that I like, and I like hearing you guys talk about it. I like hearing everyone talk about it, but I just don't use it.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of, I feel like I use it more now, but there was a lot, several years ago, I think the topic would come up on the show. Like, I would talk about how much I like it, but then I'd be like, actually, though, I never use it, or I never try it, you know? I feel like I do actually, like, I've probably voluntarily stuttered like 3 or 4 times this show, you know? So it's something I just kind of throw in, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like it's just taken a long time. I think I would like to do it more than I to do.
Yeah. And there's tons of, I mean, Karen, correct me if I'm wrong, or both of you correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that there's some pretty like high quality evidence that shows that voluntary stuttering helps. Is that true?
There's actually not that much evidence, I don't think. I know Heather Grossman from AIS has done some research on voluntary stuttering. And I remember that was a few years ago. And I remember being really excited, like, oh, sweet. There's, you know, she's doing some great research on this. I don't know beyond that, besides my own massive personal evidence.
Yeah, I don't, that's a good point. I really don't know of much. I don't think there's, I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think there's a ton of research on like any specific speech tool.
I think there's a lot on fluency shaping.
Right, but I'm thinking like even like more broken down than that.
Oh.
It would be really nice if there was like, I think one of you guys should do this, if there was like really good like random controls trials about voluntary stuttering, because it's such a hard thing for people to believe it could help and to actually do. But if someone can be like, there's evidence that if you do this, it will help. Like people like me who just like, I don't have the energy for that. I'd be like, okay, like I'm going to do this.
Yeah. It's just so hard though, because like what helps one person might not help someone else.
Yeah.
It's funny because like even when you think about like doing research on voluntary stuttering, it's weird because it's like it's not really exciting to me because I just know that it works, you know,
mm-hmm.
Which is kind of weird to say, but you know. It's hard to get like really excited about something like that, but it's also probably really necessary that there's more, you know, voluntary stuttering support in the literature.
Yeah, I think it would be huge. I think so many speech therapists will only do therapies that have evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Which is reasonable, right?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. But I just think that like in order to get more people on board to teach it,
yeah,
like it would just be so helpful to like have some more proof that it really helps.
Yeah.
Karen Herring, PhD.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Go, girl.
Well, Karen, you gotta like do therapy now, don't you? Like in a minute?
Yeah, I have a call in 3 minutes.
Okay, oh, okay. So let's wrap this.
Who wants to wrap it up?
I can wrap it up. I never do.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening to Stutter Talk. It was fun responding to a reader email. So, you know, if you'd be interested in having us talk on the show about a question or comment you have, feel free to email us or leave a message on the Facebook page. Our email is bbteam@stuttertalk.com. And good talking to you guys.
Yeah.
All right,
guys.
Until next time.
Bye.